Blue Dot, Episode 23, Bill Patzert and Our Warming Planet, plus two new Blue Dot features.
This is Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schlom.
And I'm Matt Schultz.
Today, Matt, we've got a lot of really cool things. Well, three really cool things. Two really cool people. We're going to be talking to Bill Patzert from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Our old friend.
Our old friend, one of the best friends of this program. And he's going to be talking to us about the oceans and the climate system and what's going on with this hot summer and fires and drought. And what do we have to look forward to or maybe not look forward to?
Or dread.
Right? Or dread, yes. And on a lighter note, we're going to be talking about really, well, you are going to be talking about really gross stuff with a very lovely person, Anna Rothschild, she's the host of the
Gross Science from PBS.
Yeah. PBS Digital Studios YouTube channel, Gross Science. And she's just wonderful. And your interview with her is fabulous. Look forward to listening to that.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun doing that. So we'll talk with her a little bit later in the program.
And then later, we're going to also give you my take on the new Star Trek movie, Star Trek Beyond, because I am a Trekkie or Trekker or whatever. I like Star Trek.
So we're introducing two new features to the program today.
Yes, we're going to do Science on the Tube, and we're also going to do a little Blue Dot Goes to the Movies.
And it's also a sad program.
Oh, that's right. You're leaving me. Yes,
that is
sad. This is Matt's last show. We're going to miss you, Matt.
I'm going to miss the show. I'm going to miss NSPR, and I'm going to miss those listeners out there.
Your finest work was on Blue Dot, and you know I really appreciated the wonderful theme that you gave us, that theme song. That is awesome.
Thank you. Dude. I love the theme song. Let's hear it right now.
Go for it.
That's a good one. It was fun to write. It was fun to record, and I'm glad I got to do it.
I'm thrilled with it, and I will think of you every time I hear it. But we will stay in touch, my friend.
We will.
You know, the remarkable thing about the digital age we live in and our smartphones is you will be 3,000 miles away, but right at my fingertips, and I will be bothering you constantly.
Absolutely. And speaking of bothering us, we're going to go now to Bill Patzert.
He is definitely a bother. Dr. William Patzert, oceanographer and California climate expert extraordinaire from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. Bill, welcome to the all-new Blue Dot.
Hey. Matt and Dave, you know, always a pleasure to join you.
You know, you've been one of our favorite guests over the years, and it seemed only fitting that for Matt's last show, we have you as our guest.
Matt's last show? Yeah, that's shocking, Dave, you know?
Yeah, his last show. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, talking heads like me, you know, and old goofy foot surfers turned science reporters like you, you know, we're a dime a dozen, but you know, Matt is the sound engineer extraordinaire. I don't know. We might be high and dry here, you know?
Well,
I don't think, you know, it's not right. Matt's leaving us here, Dave.
Well, all good things must come to an end. How do you feel about this, Matt?
I feel like it's a weekday, and we're doing our jobs, and we're doing great. Let's keep the ball rolling here, fellas.
Okay. Well, do you have any words of wisdom briefly for the young man before we launch into this?
Well, you know, Matt, you know, he might be a tremendous sound engineer, but, you know, he's a country boy, so when he hits Broadway, you know, when he comes to the lure of the Big Apple, I want him to be careful out there, you know. But, of course, I know he'll do great, and, you know, when you and I are on our walkers, Matt will be a star.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate that.
You know, since this is Matt's last show, I thought we'd have some fun and, you know, keep it light and, you know, not bum anybody out. So let's talk about epic drought, holocaustic fire, and heat waves. How's that? What do you
guys
think?
Sounds
good. How are you doing? Is your house in danger of burning down?
Well, I'm about 30 or 40 miles from the Sand Fire, which is in the upper San Fernando Valley. Right now it's in the Angeles National Forest, moved away from the homes. But for the last 4 days, I've had an awful lot of smoke and ash here.
Well, let's start with some climate science, Bill. You know, we just had an El Nino year. What about it surprised or didn't surprise you?
Well, you know, if we think back here, you know, the El Nino really started in 2014, 2015. We had a modest El Nino, and so when the big El Nino of 2015-2016 hit, we really had a jump start, and this El Nino was immense. You know, it was larger and longer lasting. It lasted all the way into January, in contrast to 1998-97, where it really pooped out in November. And so this was a huge event, had a tremendous impact across the planet, but it had some disappointing results here in California. Left, surprisingly, Southern California high and dry. Northern California got about normal snowpack and rainfall. And then what climatologists normally expect after Godzilla El Nino like this is the dry sibling we call La Nina, where the waters get cooler at the equator. But that hasn't developed. Here we are in July, and really the tropical Pacific looks pretty neutral. What I call La Nina. La Nada, I'm sorry.
It's La Nada.
So, yeah, La Nada. And so in terms of the winter forecast for California, it's really up in the air at this point. Wouldn't it be surprising if during the present La Nada, or if a La Nina develops this fall, we had a wet winter? Because we need it.
So,
you know, we're in the fifth consecutive year of drought here, Dave, and it's been punishing not only in California, all over the West.
Well, the drought has really, you know, contributed to these fires. We've seen two horrific fires going on right now, the one in Santa Clarita near you and Big Sur. And, you know, the season's really just beginning. We're used to bad fires in California, but what's different about these?
Well, you know, if we look back in the historical record, this is the five driest consecutive years we've experienced here in Central and Southern California. And there are more than 60 million dead trees up and down the state of California. Water tables are very low. Brush, grasses, trees, the chaparral here in Southern California is just incendiary. And any little spark has created a series of, you know, punishing, dangerous, and heartbreaking fires. Right now, there are more than two dozen fires being fought in the American West, two really large ones in California. And so this is an unusual early start to the fire season. Actually, in the last couple of years, there is no fire season. It's year-round.
You know, we're also seeing some really bad heat waves across the country. It's about to get really hot here in the North Valley, which is not unusual for this time of year. But, you know, across the country, we're seeing pretty massive heat waves. Is there anything climatologically speaking causing this?
Well, of course, these large-scale weather patterns, you're right. You know, at the end of last week, we had a high-pressure dome that really spread from the Atlantic all the way to the West Coast, and punishing heat waves, very dry, hot weather all across the nation. This is, of course, driven by jet stream patterns here in the Northern Hemisphere. And, you know, there's probably a little global warming being factored in to last winter's weather patterns and what we're seeing this summer. And we're not even into the dog days of summer yet. You know, August is the hottest month. And here in California, I always say September is the heat wave month. So, you know, batten down the hatches. And, you know, this is going to be punishing.
We have a major political party presidential candidate that is actively denying climate change at all. You care to address that if you want?
Well, that's probably due to a lack of education on the part of certain politicians in this country, and the fact that we still have lawmakers, not only at the national level, the state level, and the local level, that are bought by the most reactionary conservative forces in the country, people that champion fossil fuel use. And in the long run, this is a very dangerous, unenlightened position to take, because looking out into the new century, climate change is the real deal. We're living in a warmer world. We're living in a melting world. Sea levels are rising, and we have to wean ourselves off fossil fuels. And so Donald Trump and his ilk better get their head out of the sand and get with the program.
This is Blue Dot, and we are talking to Dr. William Patzert from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. He is an oceanographer and climate specialist.
Hey, Bill, Matt here. What are some of the important tools that NASA's using to keep track of what's going on with the oceans and how that affects our weather and our climate?
Well, here at NASA, you know, the unequivocal proof of global warming, of course, is sea level rise. And we've been monitoring at NASA with a series of satellites, TOPEX, Poseidon, followed by three JASON missions, the rise in sea level, as well as the coming and goings of things like El Nino and La Nina. And in the last 24 years, sea level has risen an average of almost 1.5 to 2 inches. And so that is the facts. And, of course, we're also monitoring the temperature of the ocean, the atmosphere, and the land. And for the last 16 months, every month, we have calculated here at NASA a new record in the average global temperature, as well as the average rise in sea level. So NASA really has its finger on the pulse of the planet, and there is no doubt we have the data. We have the facts. Global warming, sea level rise, it's the real deal. And it's probably unstoppable. But with this information, this powerful information, decision makers can transition us out of a fossil fuel economy into a renewable energy economy. And if we don't, instead of getting hit with a wiffle ball, if we transition to renewable energy, if we stay with our addiction to fossil fuels, we're going to get hit in the head with a shot put.
That doesn't sound fun.
No, this is serious business, Dave. Global warming, sea level rise, and in some ways, the long hot summer here of 2016 is a preview of coming attractions. Here in California, scientists calculate that it'll be warmer and it'll be drier. Already, snowpack seasons come later, they leave earlier, and that's had a powerful impact on water supplies up and down the state of California.
Are there any future missions or like instruments that are going to measure these effects that give you hope or excite you?
Well, you know, I've staked my career with NASA. These great missions really have revolutionized our understanding not only of the oceans, the atmospheres, but of climate variability. And we're going to continue these altimetry missions that measure the height of the sea surface, so hopefully out through the next new century. But we're also developing multispectral sensors that can monitor both marine and terrestrial ecosystems. You know, climate change has a tremendous impact on both marine and terrestrial ecosystems. The great forests, essentially, they're moving to higher and higher altitude. There has been a tremendous impact because of acidification of the oceans and warming of the oceans, of the great coral reef systems across the planet. And, you know, coral reefs are like the rainforests of the ocean. After the terrestrial rainforests, they have the greatest biodiversity. And I think of them as our pharmacies of the future. And all these systems are being impacted by rising sea levels and rising temperatures. And NASA will continue to develop new sensors so we can keep our finger on the pulse and see what the direction of all these ecosystems, where we're headed. And most of it's not good news, Matt and Dave.
As always, Bill, thanks for leaving us on a happy note, and thanks for being a friend to the show over the years.
You guys have been terrific, and people of Northern California are lucky to have you.
Thanks to Bill Patzert, NASA JPL climate expert and oceanographer. When we come back, Matt's wonderful interview with Anna Rothschild, the host of Gross Science. Now it's time for Science on the Tube. A semi-regular, in other words, whenever we feel like it, look at science content being presented in a cool and engaging way on video, as opposed to the far more fabulous thing we call radio.
Our guest today is Anna Rothschild. She's the creator and host of the PBS Nova YouTube channel Gross Science, where she delves into the things that are, well, gross. Anna, welcome.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
It's good having you. I watched your video called Why Am I Obsessed with Gross Stuff? Can you give our listeners the skinny on why it is you like to delve into the disgusting stuff?
Sure. So, I mean, gross stuff was what made me first fall in love with science. I really fell in love with science generally by, you know, dissecting owl pellets in my sixth grade biology class in school, and also playing with a slime chemistry set that my parents got me when I was around the same age. And if that was so inspiring to me, I figured it would be a great hook for a lot of other people to get interested in science as well. But on top of that, I also think that it's really important to talk about gross stuff generally, because gross stuff is, you know, gross things are often considered really taboo, and it's really important to feel comfortable asking questions about things that are taboo, especially when it comes to your own health. So, you know, for example, I can't tell you, like, how many emails and comments I've gotten from people who told me that it took them a really long time to talk to a doctor, for example, about, like, a gastrointestinal problem they had because they just were taught not to talk about gross things. So I think it's important for us to kind of normalize those conversations and at least make them conversations people are willing to have with a doctor or somebody who, you know, is providing health care to them.
Right. And you have a strong scientific background, and you've published journal research and that kind of thing. So was that sort of shift toward making, toward normalizing the gross stuff that had to do with going from that research background to the outreach videos?
Well, I think that the shift really came because when I was working in a lab, you know, I wasn't actually doing anything with health. I was working in a lab that did conservation biology, and I was also, so I did some conservation biology work, and I also studied the evolutionary biology of some parasites. And those things were really inspiring to me, and I loved working in a lab, but I found that I just was much more excited about talking about what I was doing in the lab than actually sitting there with a pipette moving fluid from one test tube to another. That's some people love that. That just wasn't for me. And so I started down the path of being a science communicator, a science journalist. But in terms of actually bringing it together with the grow stuff, that all kind of came later.
Lately, what are a few of your favorite just ew moments that you've turned into videos?
I was at the doctor pretty recently, and I had to get a tetanus shot. And that sent me down the path of just, like, looking up tetanus and, you know, figuring out what tetanus was. And I just didn't realize how sort of horrifying it was. So that became a gross science video. I also, a while back, this is kind of really disgusting, but I kept getting sore throats, and I came down with tonsil stones, which are these, like, gross deposits of, like, mucus and bacteria and food that get stuck in your tonsils when they get really inflamed. So I made a video about that, and I cannot tell you how many people afterwards were like, oh my gosh, I didn't know what these things were. I've been too embarrassed to ask anyone about them for a really long time. You know, thanks for explaining that.
Well, I have to admit that I'm one of those people. I saw that video and I was like, I gotta know what this stuff is. I had no idea.
Right?
Yeah.
I know.
So
and
thank
for
you for
so
doing
long,
that.
I just was like, I don't know what these things are. I'm kind of freaked out about them. I'm a little bit embarrassed to talk about them. But, you know, what are they?
You're listening to Blue Dot, and our guest is Anna Rothschild, host and creator of the PBS digital YouTube channel Gross Science, and this is Science on the Tube. Anna, do you have any science role models growing up?
Yeah. I really loved David Attenborough documentaries when I was a kid, so he was a huge influence on me. I also, this was when I was older, but this curator at the American Museum of Natural History, Susan Perkins, I worked with her as an undergraduate, and she really inspired me and helped me to really see science as a narrative. And I think that without her, I wouldn't have necessarily headed down the path towards science communication. She was super inspiring to me. And she also just showed me that scientists can be fun and, you know, cool and interesting. And she was a real role model as a woman in science for me as well.
And kind of along that same vein, would you give a young version of yourself any advice right now that you know what you know?
This is kind of, I guess, more general advice, not necessarily science or science communication specific, but I guess I would tell myself, like, not to worry and not to try to hide the parts of myself that I found really awkward or sort of weird as a kid, because what I find today as an adult is that those sort of awkward, weird parts of me are what make me, like, a cool and curious and, I guess, interesting adult. Even though they might not have been quite as socially acceptable as a kid.
That's Anna Rothschild. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, no problem. It's my pleasure.
She's the creator and host of the PBS Digital Studios YouTube channel, Grow Science. I'm Matt Schiltz, and you're listening to Science on the Tube on Blue Dot. Now it's time for Blue Dot at the Cinema, when a movie has a special appeal to the scientific community. We'll give our take on it.
That's right. And this week we're reviewing Star Trek Beyond.
And so we both went and saw this, but
yes.
I'm a lot more interested in what you have to think, Dave. You're a longtime fan of Star Trek.
I'm an original series guy.
Okay.
I like the reboot. I love Next Generation. I love Captain Picard. Just if for nothing else, all those great memes where you see him, you know, putting his hand to his head.
Very expressive actor.
Yes, you know, yeah. So Patrick Stewart's wonderful. But I'm an original series guy.
Got it. So what did you think about Star Trek Beyond?
For me personally, what I didn't care for was it seemed like Fast and Furious in space. It was just a little too much action for me. You know, I can only watch people you know, doing jumps, kicks, and spins and stuff and martial arts for so long, and then I just get bored.
And really started right with a bang and didn't let up.
Yeah.
I mean, with the action.
And the destruction of the Enterprise, you know, that just like went on and on and on. I imagine it would take a long time to destroy the Enterprise. But, you know, after a while, those kinds of things bored me. Now, what I did like was the relationship building that I saw going on between the characters. And for me, my favorite part of Star Trek, and one of the reasons I actually like to read some of the Star Trek books, or did when I was younger, is the relationship between Dr. McCoy, Spock, and Captain Kirk. In this movie, I was really pleased to see the new actors. Carl Urban did a fantastic McCoy. Chris Pine is excellent as Kirk. And Zachary Quinto was just spot on as Spock. He was Spock on. And I really enjoyed that part of it. You know, some of those scenes where they were just together talking, and especially at the end where you can see Spock is, well, I don't want to give it away. He's having a change of heart. And you can see, you know, that relationship is there now, which I didn't see it that much in the first two movies. It's really there in this movie, and I like that.
Well, let's get to the science in the movie. Obviously, this is science fiction.
Yeah.
There's phasers, there's warp speed.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that is pretty spectacular and pretty fantastic.
It's entertainment. So I try to check my science brain at the door because, you know, frankly, there's a lot of stuff that happens in the movie that's just absolutely ridiculous. The science aspect of it, you know, give it a D, but you know, it really, you know, it's not about that for me. It's a story. It's a fun story, and I enjoyed it. It was a good movie. It's a good popcorn movie.
All right, so now the moment of truth. What's the score?
How many dots out of four? How many blue dots out of four will I give it? I will give it 2.5 dots, almost three, but not quite, just because, like I said, I did get, you know, after a while saturated with action. But I thought it was a noble effort in the new reboot, and I think they should definitely keep going. I do hope, and I've heard, that J.J. Abrams is not going to recast the Chekhov role. I think that's a good idea. But I would like to see my favorite character come back, Jayla. Jayla, what did you think of Jayla?
Jayla was incredible. I thought that character really added a lot, and I think was immediately charismatic. I think everyone's, you know, immediately, who is that? That seems to be some sort of roguish good guy.
Played by Sofia Boutella. She was the wonderful actress.
But really, a few minutes after she had appeared and after she starts becoming a central character in the movie, you realize she's going to be in the future movies.
Yes. And I think, you know, with the passing of Anton Yelchin, I think she would be a wonderful addition to the crew. So anyway, 2.5 dots out of four, liked it, and I think it was a noble effort.
All right. That's Blue Dot at the Cinema. First one, many more to come.
And whenever my nerdy science friends out there are tweeting about a movie that they're excited to go see, then we'll review it here. Well, Matt, thanks to our guests, Bill Patzert from NASA JPL and Anna Rothschild, host of Gross Science, and thanks to Star Trek, too.
And thanks, Star Trek. Thanks, Gene Roddenberry, for having an interesting imagination.
Thanks for 50 years of just awesomeness.
Creating a cool universe for us to explore, criticize, and live in for a few moments at a time.
Yes.
And thanks to you all, the listeners, for listening to me here on my time on Blue Dot. It's been a lot of fun, and I will see you in the funny papers.
Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio. Follow us on Twitter at NSPRNews and me at Dave Schlom. And I'm reminding you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot with Matt.